Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Humble Coach Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Porrick, and you are very welcome back to the show as always. Hope everyone's doing really well today. In today's episode, guys, which is number 51, I got a chance to chat to the excellent Justin Farina of GarageAtley.com. Justin is a fantastic resource for everything Concept 2 in the last number of years, and he has a fantastic following built up in both the programming and the training side of things. So he's an excellent guy to get a chance to chat to. I hope you guys enjoy the show, and I'll see you soon.
Okay, everybody, I hope you're all doing well. This is episode number 51. You're very welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Coach Porrick. I'm joined today by what I would consider a fairly interesting coach. He is predominantly an online coach, but he has very much real-world application for a lot of his activities as well. His name is Justin Farina. Justin, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me on.
So we're going to get stuck in to, first of all, I suppose, and we're speaking a little bit off air there, about your background and how you would have got into the, I suppose, at the moment, the endurance training type of a world. Now, a lot of people will know you as the owner of Garage Athlete, and which is an excellent resource, and you've been a huge resource for a huge amount of people in the Concept 2 worlds. But before you got into it, could you give us a little bit of a spiel of what you were up to and how you got into it?
I got into that by accident. Mm-hmm. I had been heavily into CrossFit since 2005.
Okay.
And that was really the first sort of decade of my training and coaching life. And then coaching CrossFit picked up in probably like 2008 to 2010. Mm-hmm. And I really stuck with that for probably the next 5 or 6 years. And okay. Rowing, obviously, like rowing's a part of CrossFit. Mm-hmm. It's usually something that people avoid, like running, or like we said, burpees. Yeah. But very few people would, at least from my experience and talking to coaches and talking to athletes, very few people would put in the kind of work on the rowing machine or the running that they wouldn't necessarily put into their strength work. Mm-hmm. And this is going back before, I feel like endurance has sort of made a resurgence in the CrossFit world. There's a lot more people putting in mileage on the track, obviously now on the ergs and the bikes and whatnot. So there's definitely been more of a, oh, we should probably train our aerobic system more often than, you know, we otherwise would have. Mm. So I never did. Like I looked at the rower like anyone else would. That thing in Fight Gone Bad that's going to make you, you know, almost throw up at the end of a round.
Yeah, definitely.
And I didn't do a lot of it. I was decent at it because I'm tall, like I'm about 6'5". Mm-hmm. So I could get away with, if a rowing workout came up, I would do okay. Mm-hmm. And just by accident, like not on purpose. I was doing no other specific training on it other than the few calories that popped up on the main site or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then in 2015, I think just the circumstances in life presented itself where Cameron Nicol launched Rowing Watt.
Yes.
And I think I saw an ad on Instagram from Sarah Sigmund's daughter talking about Cam and talking about using the rower for training. Mm. And I don't know what it was about that ad that piqued my interest so much, other than, well, if she's doing this and this guy has this new thing, let's check it out. So because I would do that a lot when people had programs, going back to early days of CrossFit and following original coaches, and like I always like to follow James Fitzgerald stuff, Mike Bergener stuff, obviously. So those early names that were putting out material was fun to follow. So anyways, Cam launches this. It was free, which is a great price. And it was the first time I had seen structured rowing in terms of programming. And as a programming geek, I really liked it. I really liked looking at it. Because I had seen track workouts and track programs, and I kind of had a basic understanding of how you would structure work for a 5K on a run. Mm-hmm. But when Cam started talking about stroke rate and split times and pacing and all this other stuff, I was like, oh, there's layers to this I was really unaware of. And jumping on the rower two or three times a week and getting a feel for the pacing and using rate to control your speed and all these other things that he as a rower, obviously at his level, knew about, I was a huge fan. Because all of a sudden, rowing became far more easy. And the progress just kind of came with that, just the exposure to it and the progress. Like you would if you're doing a strength cycle.
Yeah.
You get stronger after 6 to 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. It's exciting. So I was never an endurance athlete. This came out of nowhere. I can't stop at this point because I don't want to see myself get slower. So I think that's why it's continued to this day. But, you know, as you know, I still love CrossFit. Still consider myself a CrossFitter. I'm just really not doing much of your traditional CrossFit stuff these days.
Yeah. Okay. That's cool. So that's like, I suppose that's an excellent way to kind of segue. There's a couple of parts that I'll segue into in just a moment on that. But
sure.
The likes of Rowing Wild, I think, has been a fantastic resource, and those kind of resources, the same as Chris Inshaw and all these other guys, and it is an excellent and I suppose it was a necessary adjustment to a small extent at least, or a necessary interest peaking within CrossFitters in general, because it was getting a bit out of hand where everything was just becoming heavy duty Metcons or mini Metcons, and it was just getting
everything barbells.
Yeah, it was getting very wound up, which, like, I think is, don't get me wrong, is fantastic, but I think is the same as yourself. Like, I've been coaching since CrossFit specifically since about 2008, 2009, and coaching other sports and in your same situation for 20 odd years. The aerobic base is really non-negotiable in every single activity. So,
I didn't realize how important it was until I really started working on it.
Yeah.
We've seen the theoretical hierarchy pyramid, you know, on CrossFit stuff. We've seen the importance of metabolic conditioning, right? We forget that probably the biggest part of that layer is that aerobic base.
Yeah.
You know, so it's easy to get stuck in the sexy stuff of CrossFit and forget about the long, slow endurance work that makes the other stuff a lot easier.
And it's actually funny, you were speaking about Sarah Sigmund's daughter, and I suppose we, as coaches, we'd always watch all of the higher level athletes and the whole lot, and we'd always assume the likes of Briggs or somebody else, but they obviously have phenomenal engines, but I watched one of the videos recently with Sarah Sigmund's daughter, and she's like, I think it was the one where they might have been in Lanzarote, and they're doing a lot of barbell work, they're doing loads of handstand walks, and then they wake up the following morning and it's like a 75k bike or 100 and something k bike, and most normal CrossFitters would be like, what the?
No.
They would look at a 30k bike and they'd be like, Jesus Christ, this is ridiculous. And they'd wonder then why somebody who might be new enough into CrossFit, into the general gym or whatever, looks like an absolute superhero, because they have either good mobility in a squat, which means they will be by default really, really good at a lot of the other things. All of the barbell stuff will now start becoming an easier entity for them. And the same, if we've had some triathletes before come in, and like all of the running workouts, all of the burpee workouts, they're going to just destroy everybody. And yet you give them a bar and like they nearly just kind of go puce on it. Like it's not their jam at all.
No.
But I think that's kind of interesting that there still is a very, very big requirement for it. But even for the likes, I think it's a hard one sometimes to sell to people the value of that length of time needed for some of these workouts, be it on the ski or on the bike or whatever it is, on the rower. In place of some of the longer running or barbell workouts that they're like, look, we just put in a big chipper workout and just kind of, that should be the same situation. And it's just not the same vibe.
Yeah.
And I think that's where...
It's easier. it's easier to sell to a games level athlete or someone who's hoping to get to that level because the games are an endurance event now. Like, yeah. If you think back to, and you probably knew of the games in 08, 09.
Yeah.
09 is when it started to get long.
Oh, like, yeah.
08 wasn't three pretty normal time domain workouts on the one day and one on the other.
Yeah.
They were miserably sore, but that's a joke compared to now.
Oh, yeah.
And in 09, when they had, I don't know, if was it 3 days then? All I know is Mikko Salo won, and he was the only guy doing that sort of volume.
Oh, yeah.
And it showed.
Absolutely.
And the evolution of the games to now, this huge multi-day event with really, really long workouts.
Yeah.
And little short, like the time domains are massive.
Mm.
So it's an easy sell to that type of athlete. Like, hey, you're going to be working out for 4 days, probably over. You could do a marathon on a rowing machine. That's just part of it. You need to get stuck into some long, slow work, probably almost every day. And not just for their aerobic stuff, but just to understand the value of recovery from that stuff, from that full day. Like that aerobic base is more than just helping you breathe.
Mm.
It's really helping you recover during long, strenuous stuff like that.
Mm.
But to sell it to your everyday person who's just getting a gym membership, like, hey, you're going to spend a lot of money, and 3 of these days, we're just going to sit on a bike and we're going to pedal for 45 minutes. And you guys can chit-chat a little bit. That's cool.
Yeah.
But try and hold this RPM or this pace.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, listen, I could do this at home, you know?
Yeah, but, and I think about
it's not as sexy as, hey, we're gonna do some deadlifts, guys, and then after that we're gonna do a workout called Cindy. So we got a lot happening today. You
know, yeah.
That's a busy class, and people get behind that. It's exciting. It's fun.
Yeah.
30 to 45 minutes steady state cardio for some people.
Yeah.
Is it fun?
No. And I think that's one of the really interesting things. It's a 7 minute or 20 minute workout, which is perfect for Instagram and noting whatever you do, but then you look at some of your stuff and we're like, okay, we're gonna look at the screen and we're like, oh, that's a lot of business. So you have to really, really earn that stuff to get the kudos for it. But the next kind of port, I suppose, from that, like, obviously it's going to be quite difficult to sell it to the normal class scenario, because if you are trying to coach a CrossFit class and you're trying to put in something like that, like I try to put in things like that as well, but again, a huge amount of it can be logistics and things like that that are going to affect it. But I think that's now at the point where it is kind of interesting, and like you mentioned about the programming, I think now, because the regular world of CrossFit, or at least I suppose the more well-known and more consistent people who've been doing CrossFit for the last few years potentially, they're now seeing that the basic gamification of fitness is at a certain level, and then they might have to try and go, okay, look, I'm actually getting a bit bored of just bars all the time and just this. So now, even like you mentioned about the splits and about the pacing, that completely adjusts and opens up a whole new level of gamification for them and keeping the interest going.
Absolutely.
So could you speak a little bit about that potentially, and how interesting you found that, and what your feedback has been to those adjustments that you might be have changed programming wise and things like that in the last maybe year or two?
Sure. Well, I think like the one big draw to CrossFit for me was always, like, as an athlete, before I was a coach, like the biggest draw was the simple competitive nature of it, the fact that we were timing things and keeping track of stuff, and you could hang out with your buddies and work out, and, you know, that was bragging rights, you know, for the day.
Mm.
Like, oh, I did 2 more rounds than you. What's up? and I liked that tracking, because you don't have that in a typical bodybuilding program. Like, you can, I did 3 sets of 8 at whatever, you know. But, you know, that element of CrossFit was probably what a lot of people got behind.
Mm-hmm.
So once I got into structure, you know, the screenshots of splits and times became that instantaneous feedback and scoreboard that drew me to CrossFit. All of a sudden it was like, oh, okay, 5K time, splits, what was my stroke rate at, and the game of trying to, you know, to hit every 1,000 meter split 20 strokes a minute at the same pace become very, very addictive. And that sort of tracking, there's this whole world of tracking times and distances and, and different workouts and whatnot, and that's very fun. And again, like you said, 7 to 20 minutes is perfect for Instagram. Well, so are concept two, you know, summary screenshots. And getting into that and discovering a whole world of people who also really thought that was cool to look at. It was like, oh, there's people here, you know, that tribe mentality, like, great, this is fun. And discovering online competitions and really diving into the concept two logbook, like, oh, there's rankings. Oh, you can get world records for this stuff. Oh, how cool. So that part was easy. Like, I was sold instantly. Yeah. I think just having that feedback and that data and that little bit of competition and that sharing of sessions and whatnot was really, really cool. Yeah. Spin bikes aren't that fun. There's no feedback there, right? Yeah. There's no monitor on a spin. I couldn't just sit there and spin up for a while, which is why I'm so happy they bought they made a biker at Concept 2. It's like monitor, and I don't mind watching Netflix and spinning out for a little while. But no, that it's the data, it's the numbers that really make it. And you know, again, like we said, the need for and the looking for structured aerobic work has definitely picked up in the fitness world. And I think the simplicity of the Concept 2 monitor and their system and their and their machines and the fact that they're in all these affiliates makes it really easy for people to sort of add this stuff into their training. And it doesn't have to be really long stuff. Like, you don't have to program a 10K.
Oh, God, no.
You know, you can easily put in intervals and get people learning how to row at specific stroke rates in a class setting. It doesn't have to be the most important piece of the workout. It can be, you know, 20 to 30 minutes of skill work because pacing is a skill before a short little Metcon finisher.
And I think
so it's possible.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, like, I'm gonna shoot off a little bit on you there because... and I mentioned this to one of the classes that I was teaching there recently. And in your on your website, on Garage Athlete, you have a free 5-day. I'm going to give you a little bit of a promo on this. It's good. And the the first workout, I'm pretty sure, I think it's the first workout, is it 8K at 20 strokes a minute?
Yep. Yeah.
So for me, I think that's amazing. Because most people would just look at that and go, oh my sweet Jesus, what the hell is this like?
And that's a nice 28 to 30 minute spin out. That's cozy.
Totally. So, but most people are going to be complaining about their butt being sore and their traps are now talking and they're like, my God, why am I turning into Popeye here? My forearm's going crazy. But I think there's nothing better than those kind of things. And it's like, like we mentioned, it's the simplicity. It's like 8K. You wouldn't think anything of it, of doing an 8K on a bike or on a run potentially. It'd be standard enough if you were any kind of a runner. And even if we said, look, go and run or bike for half an hour, it becomes a different pacing altogether.
Sure.
Whereas you turn around and make it 20 strokes a minute, which most people live at 35 if they're doing even a 2K, like they're living at 28, 20, 30. When you tell them to go to 20, it becomes like, I got some of the guys to try that and they were like, this is just weird. And I was like, okay, try that for 8K. And they're like, oh my God, this is, I said, but that's what you're looking at to try and really, like you mentioned, both develop your aerobic base and to make sure you actually are good. That's called good blood flow work. Just basic good blood flow work, making sure that you're actually staying healthy as regularly as possible. And that's essentially the most important part, I think, is the temptation sometimes can be, I'm going to come in and smash myself 2 or 3 times a week, and then I'm going to just do nothing the rest of the time. Whereas I would much prefer people to come in 5 days a week, hit it decently twice, and the remainder is skill work. It's a bit of barbell work. It's a bit of strength work. And then it is maybe 1 or 2 of those days where you're like, okay, I'm just going to spin a bit and I am going to work on a bit of patience work. And like you mentioned a couple of times, I think before, meditation. If you're not like me and you're not really a big fan of, I'm not a huge fan of normal meditation. I can't really sit still very well. I'm not very good for it.
No, the movement meditation's great.
It's the key, like. And I think that makes a huge difference to people because when, especially if you are a decent enough CrossFitter and or even a general athlete and you want to pick up a little bit more and you're like, okay, why am I getting caught on these dumbbell snatches? Why am I getting caught on this? And I try and bring it back towards like the movement patterns. And you want to try and build as much resilience in certain movement patterns as possible. And the likes of rowing and the likes of your quad work on the bike, the same, the ski erg being possibly one of the better ones, in general, upper body work, just really, really amazing. That can be very helpful for people to just start adding in more and more, more regularly. It doesn't have to be like, okay, I'm going to do 3 days a week of like a solid hour. But I do think sometimes it can be extremely helpful to keep tipping along with that. And they will notice it over time. Absolutely.
Absolutely. No. And I think the one thing that I didn't expect, that was the biggest thing I noticed from including it, is just knowledge of pacing. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, I had a reference point for time domains and workouts. Because you do a 15-minute workout, you know, not every 15-minute workout is going to be the same. And you need a lot of experience to know how you're going to handle certain movements for certain rep schemes at certain weights. But just having, all of a sudden, having, like, the rowing reference of time, like, okay, this is about a 15, 16-minute workout. That's going to be roughly 5K worth of erg work in terms of intensity. Mm-hmm. How would I pace that? How can I subsequently pace this workout knowing how I'm going to feel over a, you know, max effort 5K row? What's this going to look like?
Yeah.
That familiarity made it a lot easier to pace rounds because now I'm looking at the clock and I'm not like worried about it. I'm looking at it like, okay, I'm going to try and get this round done in 45 seconds. I'm going to take 10 seconds to transition and breathe.
Yeah.
And I know I can hold this for a while.
Mm.
Cause most people just go, most people just get sprinting and all of a sudden they're gassed and they're taking breaks and they're doing singles.
Yeah.
Whereas smart pacing from the start, makes that work more sustainable and you're not dying during the workout. You're almost picking up speed as you go.
Exactly. Right?
The same way I would approach any row, this naturally negative split stuff. I don't want to come out too hard. I want to get into it and get comfortable, find a rhythm, and then build speed gradually.
Yeah.
I'm going to do that if I do a workout like Cindy, too.
Yeah.
Fran's basically a 1,000 meter.
Yeah.
Mm. You do know how to pace that. And people look at Fran and think it's a sprint. It's not. That's more of an aerobic event than people realize.
Very much.
3 to 4 minutes, that's not a sprint. 20 seconds is a sprint. 3 minutes is not. So, like, it's high aerobic power output, and you're going to be burning for the second half of that. And I really truly believe that getting familiar with it on a rower or on a skier or on a bike makes it way easier to deal with when it's a barbell and pull-ups.
A country mile. And I think a small little aside to that as well is, and like you mentioned, the pacing is vital, but I would say it's more of even the mental pacing and being patient with yourself to not pull the trigger on certain workouts and kind of going, okay, no, I'm going to just bide my time in this first round. I know I'm going to be a little bit slower, perfectly fine. I know I'm going to have the ability to change gears if I need in the second to the third round and so on. The amount of confidence you can get from that is unbelievable. And it can be the difference between you looking nervous at the start, but looking like, okay, what's going on here? And everybody else going crazy out the gate. And then by the end, you're just picking up steadily and you're not nearly as taxed because you've just been biting and separating your energies out appropriately. But I think a lot of that is, and we all know this, that it's in the heat of that kind of an activity, it can be very difficult to hold yourself back from just going, oh my God, I'm just going to go. I'm going to try and catch this person and try and catch this person. It's so difficult.
And that experience is huge. Knowing how to pace and being familiar with your pacing and even your heart rate, you know, knowing what you can get away with and what you can't, when. That is huge.
Yeah.
No, you're very right.
And I think that's another thing as well. Like the, it's even just the building of confidence in your own abilities because you've put in so many reps.
Yeah.
Beforehand, like you're literally just building more and more of a confidence point for yourself that whenever you attack any of these things, you now are just armor building all the time. And just reinforcing
you've done it so
yourself.
Many times.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So we're going to move a little bit off for a moment. So the motivation, obviously, we've spoken about how you got into it and why you're continuing on with it. And we've spoken a little bit about the programming. Is there a particular way that you like to program at the moment, or have you just taken from certain people, like the certain influences like Shane Farmer and Cam Nickel and these guys? And is there a particular way you like to program, or are you just trying to really explore a lot of the boundaries and play around with a lot of the time frames and the stroke rates and things like that at the moment?
The more experience I've gotten, the more I've tried different things and different combinations of stuff. I've drawn a lot of my knowledge from a lot of the guys before me, a lot of people before me who coached, who put stuff online, and looking at how they structured things. Okay, how does this guy structure things? Cam was the first. Cam opened my eyes to stroke rates and paces and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then getting into the community, I learned a lot from a lot of different people. So that really set the foundation for what's become, three machines and me trying to balance, exposure across all three in a full year system. So I try and go big. I love progressions. Like I love strength progressions.
Okay.
I like a starting point and a system-based approach to an end point.
Yeah.
The trick is trying to do that, on an indoor rowing machine without losing capacity on a skier, while also trying to incorporate some bike work and strength work on top, which is very, very difficult. I try and map big and look at, if we're going to have a 2K cycle over the winter on the rowing machine, what can we then do on the skier that complements this and is not going to take away from that work?
Yeah.
So on the website, I have kind of that map laid out for people to look at. It's like, what's the year going to look like if I sign up as a member?
Nice.
And I tried to do it so we're peaking at different times for the race calendar. And there's a lot of people that race in January, February, and indoor rowing events, world championships and whatnot. Road Royalty is a really big online rowing competition in January. So we try and peak for January, February on the rowing machine. And then there's a 1,000 meter sprint in March that Concept 2 puts on. And that really kind of ends the rowing season, which kind of starts January and then ends sort of early March.
Okay.
Other than some other row series has something throughout the year, but those main ones, that's kind of our indoor rowing peak kind of online season.
Okay.
And then it's a few weeks of base work and recovery after that.
Nice.
Skierg, the big month is February.
Okay.
That's the Tour de Skierg that Concept 2 puts out. It's a 5K, 10K, 500 meter, and a 2K each week for 4 weeks.
Okay.
So the Skierg season is that month. So we have two machines kind of going simultaneously. So it's a matter of trying to program so we don't burn out on the rower.
Yeah.
Can we still improve and kind of take that basic training from the rowing machine and make sure we're skiing enough to be successful then in February on the ski as well. This is for the multi-athletes. If you're just rowing, it's a piece of cake.
Yeah.
It's a 52-week cycle with different things along the way. That's simple. But those that are trying to balance two or three now,
that's tough.
The year is set up so, you're not testing your 2K ski, 2K row, and 4K bike in the same week.
No.
Which doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
Right? So I really try and think about the year as a whole. When do we need to be at our best for specific things? And then sort of work backwards and around putting in appropriate training cycles in and around those major events. Nice. And it's a work in progress. Yeah. You know, the cycle last year, and now we have the biker sprints in July, is going to be different, you know, next year. Mm-hmm. Because we have another race that people want to do well in.
Yeah.
So, and there's a lot of flexibility. There's a lot of options with this. I'll have the main cycles going, and then I'll add in, like, hey, if you'd rather focus on your 2K ski right now, mm-hmm. here's the 12-week progression. Go ahead and have a go at it. Or are you interested in training towards your 500-meter row? Well, here's your 8-week block. Go for it. Mm-hmm. So I don't expect people to come in and just be like, oh, we're in base work for 8 weeks? Oh, this is stupid. I want to do this. I want people to at least have options for their own training, because everyone's schedule is different. Yeah. Some people don't want to be competitive across you know, 2 or 3 ergs.
Yeah.
People like to do CrossFit still and strength train. So there's definitely flexibility that way. But the main training is built around those competitive dates and then sort of just filled in afterwards around those.
Nice. That's pretty interesting. I like that. So, and I think that's one of the biggest challenges, and this is where it's going to bring me off to another direction a little bit. You am I correct? You're a teacher by trade.
Yeah, I'm a physical education teacher at a local high school.
Cool. And I'm assuming it's going to have, all of this has impacted your style, not necessarily maybe your style, but definitely you've probably brought some ideas into your job with this, or at least it's improved your coaching because you've just had to add more thought into additional games or the gamification of things to make things quite interesting for the kids.
CrossFit made me a better phys ed teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Both sort of happened in and around the same time. So as I got into coaching CrossFit, mm-hmm. I was starting my high school teaching career.
Okay.
So it was easy to look at the structure of workouts and programming mm-hmm. workouts. Like, oh, how can I show these kids this? How mm-hmm. can I incorporate this into, you know, our fitness programming at school?
Yeah.
I've always been structured and disciplined in how I approach things because of a sports background.
Mm-hmm.
So how I organize a year doesn't change. Like that's always been there.
Yeah.
But it was more, how can I take this amazing program,
mm-hmm.
you know, and all these cool opportunities to learn different movements and skills, how can I now kind of put this into a high school phys ed program?
Mm-hmm.
And just seeing, you know, a weight room transform from a bunch of cable pulley machines to pull-up bars and medicine balls and box jumps and barbells and bumper plates was really, really cool. And we know the addiction of that stuff.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's cool to train that way. And the kids buy into it.
Mm.
You know, it's awesome to compete with your friends and see how many pull-ups you can do compared to them. Again, like you said, it's the gamification of it.
Mm.
And that's an easy sell on a whiteboard for teenagers.
Yeah, very much. And has the introduction, I suppose, introduction into the concept world adjusted your thinking even more in regards to your PE job and your phys ed job, or not necessarily?
No, not really. Like, it just added another element to it.
Mm-hmm.
We had, you know, you only have so much time in a class, like you would in a gym setting.
Mm.
And you're trying to you know, provide as much opportunities as you can for mm-hmm. growth across a wide variety of people.
Yeah.
The hardest part of high school or school in general is not everyone necessarily wants to be there every day,
mm-hmm.
let alone work out at, you know, middle, you know, second period at 9:35 in the morning.
Totally.
So the one thing that my exposure to, you know, the Concept 2 stuff and just, you know, cyclical work and you know, low to moderate intensity intervals or distance work, what it allowed me to do is sort of expand what I can offer kids. Like, oh, you know, you're not interested in lifting, you want to play the fish game for a while? That's fun. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, there are kids that really want to they really want to row for a little bit. And they'll just go back and forth intervals, you know, 500 meters. So it just, it provided another option for kids that wasn't barbell work or wasn't kettlebell work or wasn't a bunch of body weight stuff.
Yeah.
Again, that's not going to, not everyone's going to be interested in that. Some people look at cardio and say, no way. No, just give me a bar. Just want to lift. Just want to get strong. And that's fine. So,
But I think that can be interesting. Like, I think that can help, especially that kind of age group, in high school. Like, if you are, I suppose it can be a contentious enough and a challenging enough environment, mentally and emotionally for all of those kids. But something like that, something like straightforward cyclical work, might actually kind of just bring them back to a nice base point, and it definitely can be a really helpful alternative, to some of the more, I suppose, the more regular looking kind of weightlifting, or else just lots of running or whatever it is, and stuff that might be a little bit more novel than just the kind of old school stuff and just kind of stuck
in. No, for sure. Some kids need a really aggressive outlet, and weights are a great thing for that. Yeah. Some kids that can't sit still and would do well to try yoga or meditation find the movement and rhythm of, you know, steady rowing or skiing to be really, really beneficial.
Very much, exactly.
And I teach at a high school where there's, you know, that everyone has special needs. It's not a typical high school.
Okay.
Most of the kids are going to go into the trades. Very few are very academic, so we have a lot of behavioral issues.
Yeah.
And they look at gym and, you know, even playing basketball at lunch or the weight room during class as something way more fun than sitting through geography for an hour. So I think it's really important to them. It's an important place for them. And it should be, you know, fun and enjoyable. And, you know, the kids that do sit in and do like rowing, like they put their headphones in and they'll row for 20 minutes even. That's fine.
Yeah.
And they'll feel better. They'll feel a lot better after that.
Absolutely. Nice. I think that's fantastic. And I think that I think that will occur more and more. Maybe not necessarily in on a very, very large scale, but I can see that being implemented more and more. I know in Ireland, for example, and in all the CrossFit gyms in Ireland, we're getting more and more interested in both. I suppose in general, the CrossFit world is dissipating into the and seeping into all the different areas, be it with strength and conditioning and with different teams and things like that, and everything now, even in certain individual sports or in certain sports and indigenous sports to our own country, it's becoming standard enough that the training facility, it looks very much like a CrossFit gym or somewhat like that. So
it's a great shift. I love it.
Yeah. And it's a huge part, because I can see that happening in a lot of the schools. If it will take a little while, but I think that will be super, super helpful, that kind of an orientation. I won't keep you for too much longer now, but I'm curious of a couple of particular areas.
Sure.
One particular question, I suppose, would be the complementary strength work that you might do for your amount of volume at the moment. Do you have any particular recommendations for people, or is it just a case of kind of keeping it simple enough and maybe dialing back some of the amount of days they're doing certain strength work, or just maybe being a bit more specific to certain people's weaknesses?
Big question. Really depends on the individual and their age and how often they're training. So I guess I'll speak to me first.
Yes.
I'm 37. I really, really like training on the ergs. My strength work is minimal. Hard
carrying children
at low rate, that's my squat. So I know my barbell work isn't as much as it used to be, or even my body weight stuff isn't as much as it used to be.
Yeah.
I try and get my conditioning work, my rowing and ski stuff done first. That's always my priority every day. And I'll kind of layer in strength work around that. I don't do as many Metcons these days.
Yeah.
Because I'm getting so much of that from the other stuff. Yeah. I don't want to hinder my ski times. I don't want to hinder my rowing session.
Yeah.
I'm okay with being tired when I'm doing deadlifts.
Yeah.
It's fine. I'll take more breaks. It's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But if I squat heavy before a rowing workout, I'll pay for it.
Oh, yeah.
And even people that come into the program that are complaining that they're tired and they're not rowing well, a simple flip like that, like instead of squatting first, squat after. Use your row as your warm-up, you know? You'll be hot. You'll be sweating. Take 10 minutes, let your heart rate calm down, and then start to warm up your barbell. You'll probably notice a difference. Your strength numbers will probably be the same.
Yeah.
And you'll feel a lot better knowing that you had a great, you know, skier session, you had a great lift. You know, that's an easy switch.
Yeah.
People need to find some balance. Like if you're used to training 5 days a week, and you're interested in putting in, you know, maybe multiple sessions, that's really easy to kind of do a little bit of both. But again, until you get into it and kind of see how your body's going to react to a schedule, it's hard to just, you know, make a blanket statement like, okay, try and lift in and around these things. So, you know, it takes time for people to get used to it and figure out how many rowing sessions can I do and still get my, you know, 3 days of CrossFit in without dying or without paying for it too heavily.
Yeah.
And that takes time and it takes some exposure to it and whatnot.
But I think go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think for most people, strength work and their regular sort of GPP conditioning is fine. It's important. People that are trying to improve their rowing, though, specifically, or their times on the ski erg, you don't need lift to improve those things.
Yeah.
You need to do those things. People don't want to hear that.
No.
You know, people ask me, like, do you squat? Like, is that why your rowing times are so good? I'm like, no, I row a lot.
Yeah.
I stop squatting. I'll take months off at a time sometimes if I'm in a specific cycle. You need to get on the machine. You need to put in the mileage. You can get a lot of resistance-based work in on these machines, which I love.
Oh, yeah.
You're not going to see a huge dip in I've noticed the dip in my strength performance, but that's what happens when you specialize, and that's what happens when you spend a lot more time in these domains. I'm okay with that. I'm not looking to be really, really, really strong anymore. I also don't want to be really, really, really sore anymore just because of family responsibilities and kids. So I don't get really sore from a lot of my workouts anymore.
But I think that's a huge part. Like, I think that's a vital element. I think a lot of people who would get into CrossFit or get into certain types of training, and they almost see it as a requirement to get very, very sore. And I think the challenge for us as coaches and all of us is trying to find a point and the type of conversation where we can all, not necessarily persuade people, but definitely move them in the right direction where it's their idea that they need more conditioning or more smart conditioning rather than just lots and lots of strength. Like the way you mentioned the back squatting afterwards, like that's a hugely vital part. Most people don't accept that needs to be the way. When it's an absolute no-brainer that you're going to be spending 15, 20 minutes warming your body up in general, if it's a comprehensive enough warm-up, it's likely to actually be that what you would have done for your back squat. So rather than doing 5 or 7 minutes of a warm up and then deciding to just do lots and lots of ramp up sets, you can still do some ramp up sets, of course, but you're going to be way, way more prepared for getting into some of the more challenging weights at that stage. And again, it should be complementary to whatever the priority is rather than, than just making sure that you're spinning the numbers in. Like we'd say, for example, with some of the pacing that you might put in your programming, and some of the splits, if you're not hitting the splits, it's probably either a mental energy issue or it's an actual, a practice issue. And like you mentioned, the practice needs to go in rather than just like, okay, I'm going to slam on it and make sure I can get this done and then move to my strength work and then move to my Metcon. There needs to be, I think, a good considerable amount of respect for the challenge of being a really efficient rower and being really, really efficient on the ski erg. Whenever I see people doing that really, really well, it's a serious art form. And I've known rowers from well back in the day, and when you see them moving and the amount of actual training they would do, it's phenomenal stuff. And they could easily handle themselves in a weight room if they were just given the correct techniques. But again, they just have a different mentality. They're like, no, this isn't going to mess up my sport. I'm just going to keep it simple. And I'm not annoyed by your sport, but I'm just going to, I know my sport, and I know that I need to keep it safe and keep it sacrosanct. I suppose the final thing, do you really have a considerable addiction to burgers, or is it the truth that burgers move ergs?
Okay, so if you're familiar with rowing at all, there is this saying that oats move boats. I'm guessing that for a long time, early morning oatmeal.
Yeah.
Before a 5 a.m., 20K on the water was normal or common.
Yeah.
So a bunch of, mid-30 dads who, row in their garages and flip burgers on their grill, it just makes sense.
It's amazing. It's all so good.
Speak for themselves. I mean, people are setting PRs and smashing double cheeseburgers almost weekly now, so
it's a great thing. It's a great thing.
There's science behind this yet, but there should be.
Nice.
What's interesting is I probably eat more burgers than I normally would because of the rhyme.
Yeah.
So maybe in the long run it'll be bad, but for now.
Nice. It's working a charm, so it is. It
makes sense.
I love it. final question, Justin, before I let you go. What would your next step in coaching be? Are you looking forward to continuing on with the Garage Athletes, programming in general and kind of growing that? Or is there anything else kind of piquing your interest? Is it combining different sports with the endurance orientation or something like that? Like, you've got a significant background in sports. Like, you, am I correct in you're a D1 athlete as well? So you've got a fairly savvy kind of awareness of what it takes to combine that stuff. But do you have a next step coaching wise that you're kind of looking at in the next couple of years, maybe?
Right now things work. With our family and our current situation, we have three boys, but our youngest has been a challenge, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
The current state of the online program and the training really makes sense right now.
Mm-hmm.
As he goes, gets older and things get easier and time frees up.
Yeah.
I would love, the teacher in me really wants to get into seminars.
Yeah.
That's a real easy transition from the classroom, into that. Because I think there is, like you said, there's a need for, knowledge of pacing and putting workouts together and how do I program for a gym. Mm-hmm. Or how do I program for a team or whatnot? So seminars is the next phase I'd like to get into.
Nice.
The live training thing interests me.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really good guys doing that on the rowing machine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it would be good for video to see someone ski erging, bobbing up and down.
It's a challenging spectator sport. Yeah.
Trying to talk. I think live training interests me. Seminars obviously interest me. And I think just continuing to build out the program, I'd love to draw more of the CrossFit community in. And, we program four workouts a week that are mixed modal GPP stuff that include one or some of the available ergs or the fan bike. Mm-hmm. And that's more for them to improve their knowledge of pacing within a workout. So those would be the things I would kind of move towards. I love the online stuff. It's been a great switch. Time is precious right now, and I get a lot of flexibility working with people during the day in short little bursts.
Yeah.
You know, thanks for thanks to Instagram and, and Facebook and email and whatnot. So we'll see. We'll see how things progress. Yeah. Okay. I would ultimately love to have like a headquarters, like a studio that isn't my garage, where I can work with people in workouts, you know, in small group or larger group settings. Rob Carson, who's a friend of mine online, they opened one in New York recently, Concept Fitness. And, you know, I've told them, I'm super jealous of where you're at in your coaching world right now. Yeah. Like, your studio looks exactly like the kind of thing I would really like to dive into. So that would be That'd be cool. Awesome. I would also like to dive into the competitive realm. We've talked about myself and one of our athletes, Ollie Gray.
Yeah.
He's out of the UK. He also consumes burgers and smashes herbs. We've toyed with the idea of having a Garage Athlete Games where we have an online competition, like Road Royalty, but not just on the rowing machine and not just on the ski erg. I'd love to see a combination. People that are well-rounded on multiple ergs competing online. So it's not as broad a scope as CrossFit,
but it's
the same sort of idea. It pays to be well-rounded on these things.
And, absolutely.
So those there's, you know, there's a lot of different ideas, a lot of different things that I'd like to get into. It might be until I hit my 40s where these things become a, a reality, but I tell my wife, our 40s, 40s going to be awesome, babe. I can't wait.
I'm in the same boat. I'm 38 now. We keep saying, I keep saying that to my girlfriend. We're like, it's going to be amazing. It's all going to start now. Don't worry.
At some point, we just got to get there. Life is an endurance event.
Life is like, tough,
I
man.
Appreciate it more because I row 10 Ks all the time. So
very much. Okay. Well, Justin, I'm gonna leave you to it. People can find you obviously on Instagram, at Garage Athlete. But then you also have your website, which is GarageAthleteFitness.com. Awesome. And yeah, folks, it's fantastic to resource to check out. Justin really knows his stuff on this. So I want to say a massive thank you, Justin, for joining me. It's been a huge, huge honor to talk to you. And
This has been great. Thank you very much for having me on.
No worries at all. And you're very, very welcome to Ireland anytime you want, dude. If you get a chance to get over here, we'll catch up and we can hit some training. It'd be awesome.
I hope that happens someday. That'd be great.
Nice. Great stuff. Well, thanks a million. And I'll chat to you very, very soon.
Great. Bye.
Cool. All right, folks. So you've just been listening to episode number 51 of the Humble Coach Podcast. First of all, I'd like to say a massive thank you to Justin Farina, my guest on today's podcast. It was a great pleasure to get a chance to talk to you, Justin, so I really appreciate you taking the time. I've noticed a lot of really interesting stuff within the conversation there that I'm gonna have to give a couple of re-listens to really nail it down. But I've no doubt we're gonna be able to use a lot of those really, really good ideas in the near future. I'd like to, second of all, say a massive thanks to everybody for the support of the show as always. It's really, really appreciated. And I look forward to continuing on this for a good while to come. If you guys would like to check out any of the other episodes on the Humble Coach Podcast, you can check us out on our home base of podbean.com, or also on Spotify and on Stitcher, and pretty much anywhere else you get your podcast these days, we're there. Hope you guys have a fantastic day, and I'll chat to you very, very soon.